Welcome to Thelema Now, a podcast about Aleister Crowley, ritual, and magic. Our guest today is musician Chris Force from the group Amber Asylum. And now here is today's host, Soror Eniel.
Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. Thank you so much for listening to Thelema Now. Frater Puck is on a brief sabbatical, but don't worry, he'll be back soon. Today we're going to be talking to Chris Force, the singer for Amber Asylum, and she's also a magician. Chris, thanks for taking time out to talk to us today.
Sure, no problem.
So when I spoke with you last, I was doing an interview for Behutet Magazine, which is actually in number 42 and can be purchased on behutetmagazine.com. And during that conversation, you were speaking about experimenting with Enochian magic. Mm-hmm. And can you talk to us a little bit about your experiments and maybe how they affected your creative ability?
I started as a guest, and I was also studying at the Berkeley Psychic Institute, so mm-hmm. I had this sort of inherent scrying ability, and I worked with a magus who did all the calls and invocations and scryed and visited a number of aethers, and how it affected my creativity, I think it really opened my mind as for the potential or the possibility of the universe, like how vast it actually is, and how we have access to these other planes of existence and reality, and they are not dependent on time constraints. I mean, that's really just opening a bombshell for anyone.
And you found that this it made your experience as a musician richer?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I think that there's this kind of poetic flow that happens with prayer, and it happens in ritual, but it also happens in music. And I feel like they're one and the same. However, the music is nonverbal, so in some ways it can express things that we don't have words for. And it creates a space almost. So I think in some ways they go perfectly together.
Okay, and that kind of leads into my next question about if someone wanted to use music to create a sigil, how would they start?
To create a sigil through music, well, if you are the one crafting the music, it automatically has your intent. It has your intention behind it, which is the same as praying. Even more so because you're focused on the craft and the discipline of making the music into form. So you are relieved of your desire for results. You're freed of that because there is this craft involved that you have to focus on. I find it to be very effective. I think there's only really two kinds of songs I write, and one is a journal and the other is a sigil. One's documenting and one is visualizing. And you can go to this nonverbal place. I think we're a little limited in our communication if we only speak, you know, two or three languages or even one language. We're just limited. So how about this language of emotion where any living being can understand?
So if someone isn't a musician per se, do you feel like they could use someone else's music if they feel that emotional draw to it?
Absolutely, absolutely. I've found that as a byproduct of music that I create, and it's remarkable, you know, where people will come up to me and say, this made me feel this particular way, I might say back to them or know personally that when I was making it, I felt that exact way. So I think that that's a beautiful translation, that someone else's intentions can be applied. And then they're filtered. They're filtered through the person using, through their intention. You know, they can take that space that that music creates and filter it with their own goals. So in a way, it becomes like a marriage.
So you would say that anyone practicing any form of magic could apply this to their practice? They wouldn't
Yes.
necessarily have to be a Wiccan or a neo-pagan or a Thelemite, they could be whatever.
Yes. I mean, I find I'm moved listening to all kinds of music. And it's interesting, when I'm actually doing my working, I want silence. But it's, I think, because music is so, I'm drawn to it so intently. But when I'm actually doing a working, I'll do it in silence. Or if I'm meditating, I want silence. But yes, I don't think it matters what faith you have. I think music has a power to inform your beliefs, regardless of what faith you have. And of course, it's universal and it's nonverbal a lot of the time. Sometimes I use a lot of, I use lyrics. So there is that, again, that filter the person can apply, that they bring themselves. They bring themselves to the music and make it something larger.
And can you talk to us a little bit about how Salima may figure into your own practices? Were you drawn to it? Or
I think Salima, it was more of a social thing for me. Like I my teacher was Salima. He was the one who showed me the Enochian system. I was crying for him. And it was more that was available to me. Then I pursued it. It came to me. So it was really very organic and natural how that all came into play and manifested. It was like it was meant to be. I think my own practice and faith, though, it's less defined. The older I get, the less clear things become. the older I get, the less I know, it seems.
And I'm aware that you were going to be performing at the Musica Mystica Maxima Festival in September at Santos Party House. And I was wondering if you could tell us anything about the ritual you'll be performing or the kind of show you'll be performing.
I'm writing a song that is a call. It's a call to a particular type of energy. It could be the Magus energy. The Magus identity. As for whether it will have language or words at this point, I'm not really sure, but it's a place of love and mastery. That's really what I'm sort of focusing on right now, so it makes sense.
How do you feel about something live ritualistically in that kind of setting, in a concert setting?
In a regular concert setting, I don't feel that good about it. I think it's really personal, and I, like I said, people who are participating or watching, they add their own filter to the experience. I think in this setting, it's fine. It's great. I don't know for sure. I'm going to speculate that most people will be really supportive and understand. So in this setting, I think it's totally fine. In other settings, I might feel that it reveals too much of myself. Going back to the Magus, what I was wanting to do was give people a glance at the third aether, or, attempt to do that with music.
That sounds awesome. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, I've been drawn to it lately, so I'm started writing. I also, it's funny because I did music, and then I painted. And I studied visual art in college, and I would paint pictures, and then they would happen. And it was kind of disturbing, where I couldn't disconnect from that. Like, I would paint these narrative images, and then they would manifest. And some of them were really extreme. So I really kind of freed myself in a way where I don't have to care about the result. With music, where I've liberated that. So I think I'm in an investigation myself, in a place of discovery, where I'm not sure if I can paint a picture of an aether or my interpretation, my vision of that, my scry of that, with sound. So I'm going to try.
Awesome.
Yeah, I hope so.
Is there anything else that you're working on now, aside from the song for the festival?
Yes, I'm working on a lot of stuff. I'm actually working really hard right now. I just took a little vacation, and I had the H1N1 virus, which was really transporting. Like, I always think that illness, when you're hosting another being like that, even though it's microscopic, it really has a strong influence on your psyche. And I wrote this amazing piece of music called H1N1. So that I had been working on that, and I'm pretty happy with it. When I work on something, I'll play it for like 3 days straight. You know, I may turn it off to go to sleep, but I have it on the whole time. And I'm really just listening, and I'll be doing things. I'll be, you know, washing dishes or walking around, and I'm playing the song, sometimes very loud, like sometimes it will be vibrating the building. But I'm also working on an installation for the Chicago Museum of Science and Industry. I'm doing heart sound design for this gigantic, massive heart that will be in a gallery soon. And you walk up to it and you hold this sensor, like this handle, and it syncs to your heartbeat. It's funny because they're a science museum and they want it to be very naturalistic and accurate. So they played my heart sound design too for a cardiac expert who said it sounded like a heart murmur. He said it was a perfect heart murmur. And I thought that was really funny. But so there's that one side where I'm doing this extremely clinical, naturalistic sound design, which is very stressful, I have to say. And then I'm doing a game for the Tale of Tales people with Jarbo. It's called Fatal, but it's the story of John the Baptist and Salome. And they're the opposite extreme, where I really get to push the envelope creatively, and they really appreciate my choices musically and with sound, and I love having that freedom. It's almost when you have confines, there's this freedom within the confines, whereas here I don't even feel like I have the confines, so it's a challenge to visualize what you can do next.
What inspires you when you were getting ready to write or you were going to paint something, or just what is it that inspires you to do these things?
It has to be a life force. I'm inspired by witnessing passion by others. I'm inspired by watching the musician and focusing in the present tense, watching the musicians become one mind. I'm inspired by art and film. I'm inspired by poetry. So if I'm feeling fallow or dry, I'll break out some poetry. I will watch a film that I sometimes films, you know, that's a crapshoot if you haven't seen them already. But if you've seen them already, they don't have the same intensity. You know, sometimes I'm incredibly moved by film. I'm like the first person to cry in the movies, always. And, you know, it's a funny thing, too, because marching bands and parades always make me cry. And I don't know why. It's funny. So I would say I'd go see a parade, but there aren't parades every day.
So do you think you'll ever be painting again, or is that something you do on the side sometimes? Or?
Well, you know, I had a child, and I kind of packed up my paints when he was little because I didn't want the toxicity around. Mm-hmm. And I really gravitated my focus to sound and audio, and it's cleaner. But I have been painting again, and I'm a little rusty. But I have been painting again.
And are you having the same experiences where things are manifesting from your paintings?
I haven't painted any narrative images yet, so maybe.
Can you actually tell us about maybe one of those experiences that you had when that happened?
Oh, yeah. The most tragic was a picture of a woman standing over a small child who was laying down on the ground, seemingly dead. And a friend of mine had their child die, like, within, like, days of me finishing the painting. Another one was this kind of portrait of a woman in a sitting, and she was a blonde woman, and she, I thought it was, like, a self-portrait, and there was this kind of movement. Have you been watching True Blood?
Yes.
Okay, do you know how Marianne wiggles?
Yes.
I tried to paint that, and it was, like, this woman in two places at one time. And I wrote above it, EAEA. EAEA. And I had a rune above it, too. And I actually didn't even know what runes were at that time. I was quite young. And then within, like, a couple of weeks, this woman Elizabeth Ames and Aaron Anderson both died, and they were both part of my life. One of them I worked with, the other one I actually did some art and ritual with. So you can see why I kind of stopped painting.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't always, you know, positive. Although, I have to say, like, I painted my son before he was born, and I had no idea that I was going to have a child within, you know, a year. And I painted a picture of his father looking at him before we had even met. And it was clearly him when I finally did meet him.
Wow, it's really powerful.
Well, I kind of feel like we all have access to that information. Like, we all do. And I think when we accept that, the world will go through a new paradigm shift. You know, I always had this nagging discontent when people would talk about past lives, because I was like, yeah, sure, I have past lives, maybe. But then I was like, but what about my future lives and my sideways lives and my upside-down lives? Like, it just didn't make sense that that would go in one direction only, you know? Like, it had to kind of map out in 3D at least, or maybe even go flat in 2D. Who knows? So I really do feel like everyone, if we just learn how, if we just listen, and we all have access to that information.
So sort of a time is not linear idea.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, they've done some research where your brain knows what you're doing before you're doing it.
How do you mean?
Scientists have done research where they put sensors on your, like, open skull, like, on your brain, and they see electrical firing in the area of the brain. Say you drink some lemonade, and it makes the right side of your brain fire, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they know that. They've already documented what part of your brain is going to make fire. But then something happens to you, or you look at a picture, your brain will fire before you see it. There was a research project I worked with, Dean Radin and Russell Targ. Russell Targ did Stargate for the government, the remote viewing project, and they did this experiment. It was double blind, so they had someone handing an envelope to someone who was then showing it to a person. And the person was having a response to that before they saw what was inside the envelope. And some of the images were quite graphic, like accidents. And, you know, they would evoke a raise in body temperature or excitement level. And they were having it, you know, a millisecond before they saw the picture. Crazy out there.
So when you say all information, you mean all past and future and everything there is possible to know, it's possible for a human being to know this?
I believe so. I believe so. I mean, we sometimes talk to angels or, you know, or another version of ourselves in another place, possibly. Magicians intuitively understand this. Otherwise, they might be accountants instead.
I appreciate you calling in.
My pleasure.
Hopefully we can do it again sometime.
You have been listening to The Lima Now. Today, your host was Sarar Aniel, and her guest was Chris Force from the band Amber Asylum. Amber Asylum will be playing at the Musica Mystica Maxima Festival at the Santos Party House in New York City in September on the 21st and 22nd. This podcast is produced with the support of the Ordo Templi Orientis USA Grand Lodge, although the opinions expressed on this program by hosts and guests are theirs alone and do not necessarily represent those of the OTO USA or any of its officers or directors. Our mission is to provide listeners with interesting, informative, and thought-provoking interviews featuring people involved in mysticism, spirituality, and magical theory and practice. Our theme music is provided by Fern Knight, and you can hear more about Fern Knight at fernknight.com. That is Knight with a K. Our podcast producer is Sorar Amy. And until next time, 93.